Well, turn back, if you would, to Exodus chapter 20 and to that last commandment, the 10th one that we're going to be looking at this morning. You shall not covet. So we'll just leap straight in, just thinking about what the words mean in that commandment. The word covet actually is quite a broad word. It means you shall not desire or delight in. And the same word is used in the Bible elsewhere for talking about something else, even desiring good things. In desiring God, the same word is used, actually. But here it's obviously talking about something negative. So often we give a sort of a definition, if we explain it to children, to covet is to want what somebody else has, isn't it? To not be satisfied, but to desire what your neighbour has, what somebody else has, and want it for yourself. And this commandment, obviously, is very much linked to greed, isn't it? Not being satisfied with what we have, but wanting what somebody else does. That greed is also related, isn't it, just to envy and jealousy of looking at somebody else and coveting what they have, and then it's stirring in us this rather ugly attitude of being envious, being sort of mixed with this jealousy, a bit of hatred for how comes they've got things so good and I haven't, and the rest of it. And so God gives us here this last commandment, this 10th one. And in it, there are these examples that God gives. You shall not covet your neighbour's house. You shall not covet your neighbour's wife, nor his male servant, nor his female servant, nor his ox, nor his donkey, nor anything else that is your neighbour's. And for the people of Israel, those were the things that God gives as illustrations, as the kind of thing that they might covet. Your neighbour's house, it might be the land that came to his in the promised land and so on, his allocation. The house, the wealth with which he built. House can also mean in the Old Testament family, his family, his prestige, his family line and so on as well. A little bit of his status, maybe. Do not covet your neighbour's house, all those things. Do not covet your neighbour's wife. Well, maybe especially coveting someone in particular, which could, of course, lead to adultery. It could be coveting a family situation as well. Do not covet your neighbour's servants. Probably doesn't quite apply quite as much to us. But servants were a sign of status, of standing in society, having quite a reputation, being a bit upper class, that kind of thing. And so the more servants you had, well, the more higher up the hierarchy you were. Well, don't covet that, says God. Do not covet your neighbour's ox or donkey. Well, we're probably not going to do that. But those were a sign of wealth. People didn't tend to have an awful lot of cash, per se, or definitely not a bank account, but their worth, their wealth was assessed in terms of animals, livestock they had. That's the way they thought. But then God says, and anything else? That's pretty big in terms of what it's saying. You shall not covet, says God. And although it's the 10th commandment, it's not really the last in the way we the way we process. Because breaking the 10th commandment often comes before one of the other ones. Or this one then leads to another one. So, for instance, coveting your neighbour's wealth might lead to stealing. So you break the 10th, then you break the 8th. Or coveting your neighbour's wife could lead to adultery. Breaking the 10th leads to breaking the 7th. So it doesn't really come last, in a sense. Coveting your neighbour's reputation might lead to lying about them to besmirch that reputation. Breaking the 10th leads to breaking the 9th. Coveting your neighbour's life and being so full of jealousy and resentment about them could lead to murder. Breaking the 10th could lead to breaking the 6th. There we go, they're all linked, aren't they? As we've tried to think several times in this series, These are God's good commandments. They all fit together. It wasn't just God there up Mount Sinai sort of thinking to himself, what shall I choose? How am I going to, let's just rattle some things together. No, this is works together as a framework. The commandments fit together really well. They back each other up. They unite together in showing us what God's requirements are, what those good commandments are. Well, let's think for ourselves, because we're a little unlikely to covet our neighbour's donkey. But what might we in our society be more prone to coveting? And the list is huge. Let's just look through a couple of things that we might covet. Well, the most obvious one perhaps is wealth. We might covet somebody's wealth, the money they have, the bank accounts they have, and the things that can then buy. We find those things very obvious. Those things are all around us. As I said, for the people, ancient people of Israel, there wasn't an awful lot of things you could buy, really. Houses weren't that different and so on. You just had a slightly larger flock of sheep and so on. But in our modern age, there are so many things, aren't there, to buy. And we covet those things. I want is the thought that comes in our minds. I want that house, that car, those clothes, that holiday, whatever it might be. We hear of somebody else having it and we want it. But it could also be other things. We might see somebody else's popularity. Again, maybe especially in our world. In a sense, in the old life of Israel, you could only possibly covet the people you knew around you, which were probably quite a small number of people in your town or village. So the possibilities were less. Now with worldwide communication, we can covet anyone, wherever they live in the world, because now we know about them. And especially those who are promoted to us, the celebrities and the like, we see their lifestyle, which, 100 years ago we wouldn't have done, so it didn't bother us. But now it does. We see their popularity. We see the acclaim that they get. We see the attention that they have. And we want it for ourselves. Status. It can be any other things, though. You can walk into the office staff room, and you can see somebody else, and they're surrounded. They're the centre of attention. They're telling a story about what they did this weekend, and everyone's laughing and you think, oh, I wish I was popular like that. You can think the same. Family and relationships, a little bit hinted at in those words of the commandment itself. But those who are married can sometimes envy those who are single. Those who are single can envy those who are married. It may be other things about our upbringing. We may look at somebody else's and say, oh, if only I'd had a childhood like they've got, and my upbringing was so hard. Or if only I had parents like them. They seem much better than my parents. We might be able to covet a specific person. As God says here, you might covet your neighbour's wife. It may literally be a person that you look at and think, oh, if only I was married to them. I wish I had. I wish I was married to that person. I wish I had a family like so-and-so. And on we think. We might covet people's abilities. They may be their academic success. And we hear about their exam results and think, goodness me, if only I was that intelligent. They've got it easy. They just walk through school and everything seems to come to them so simply. Or maybe it's their sporting talents or their musical gifts or their artistic nature, and we see them do something. We say, God, I could never do anything like that, even if I worked and worked at it. It's never going to happen. And maybe we think in our minds, it's not fair. Why did they get all those gifts? And I got so few. We might covet someone's job or career, the success, the prestige that has come their way. We might, or the money or things that come from it. We might covet their job or their career. And we think to ourselves, why haven't I got that? They've gone on, they've got promotion after promotion, they're up the career ladder now. And I'm just slogging along. Nothing's changed. My job's not going anywhere. Why haven't I got what they've got? Could be physical things. We might covet someone's appearance, their good looks. And we look at ourselves in the mirror and think, wow, I only wish I looked like them. the celebrities on the magazine, somebody else we see. We wish we had more. We're more like them. We could covet somebody's health. We hear of somebody else, and they never seem to have a cold. And they're so fit and strong. And we're struggling. And maybe we resent it. And you think, oh, if only I had their level of fitness. If only I seem to have a life like they are able to live. We can covet elements of people's personalities. As I said before, somebody's popularity. Or just the way somebody comes alongside. They're just so friendly. They're just so approachable. And you think, I find it really hard to talk to people like that. They just seem to have such a lovely personality. Everyone loves them. Everyone gets on with them. We might just covet someone's success, just in the general sense. We sort of use phrases, don't we? Oh, so-and-so, Bob, he has all the luck. Everything seems to come easy to him. He always lands on his feet. We have these funny sort of expressions, don't we? Everything seems simple for him. Nothing seems to get him down. It always seems to turn out all right for him. And on the other hand, poor me. Poor old me, life's hard. I struggle with things. Life seems to be quite an uphill struggle, an uphill battle. And maybe even as Christians, we can have an extra thing we covet. Maybe the other world, the world might not see this one. We might covet someone's spirituality, their Christian life. And we think, they've become a Christian, they had such an amazing testimony, but in comparison, mine just seems quite ordinary. Or their spiritual life, they seem to be learning so much, they seem to know the Bible inside out, off by heart, and I keep forgetting it. And they're really gifted, and they're really fruitful in serving God. Do you know how many people they've witnessed to and they've become Christians? That's never happened to me. No one seems that interested. They seem so successful as a Christian. But I seem a pretty borderline one. One that's really struggling. You shall not covet. Maybe just a glimpse of some of the things that we might need to think about for ourselves. Maybe some in particular we're more vulnerable to. And others we're not that bothered by. But it's to sort of examine our hearts, isn't it? To think about those kind of things. Well, as we think of coveting, it is about that grasping nature, comparing ourselves to others, as we thought before, jealousy and greed. And we need to be aware of those things. We're told in the New Testament to beware of that bitterness, that resentment. If we don't nip it in the bud, it just gets worse and worse, doesn't it? That attitude of coveting. But it does work sometimes. And we did mention it as well with that rich young ruler that we read of. There's also another side to it. We can look at ourselves and compare ourselves to others and be feeling a little bit that our glass is a bit half empty, and so we're jealous and greedy. Or the other side is we look at what we have and think that is quite superior to other people, and that then leads to a smugness or a pride, which is exactly the same thing. It's just the opposite side of the coin. It's the same grasping nature, either trying to grab hold of what somebody else has or keep what we have for ourselves. If we're pleased with some of those things that we have, it's the same thing that happens. Well, let's look through our four normal steps. Firstly, then, a good commandment. We thought already of how the commandments fit together. And this one, right at the end, the 10th one, just neatly sort of forms like a bracket right at the end. Say, this is it. In the Deuteronomy account of giving of the Ten Commandments, it does finish like that. These are the commandments, literally the 10 words that God has given, and he gave no more. Full stop. This one forms the full stop at the end. And it very neatly, in many ways, mirrors the first, doesn't it? You shall have no other gods before me. That's the first one. And the last one is that you shall not covet. And of course, if we're coveting something, then that's very likely to have become a god before the real God, isn't it? If we're so obsessed with wealth, or job, or personality, or success, or whatever it is, if we're coveting those things, it's likely that those things have become a god before the real God. And so 1 and 10 sort of neatly bracket the whole thing. this good commandments that fit together. And as we said already, if we could only sort and obey this one, it would help us with all the others. As we thought, most especially those commandments about how we treat other people. If we're freed from that resentment and jealousy and bitterness, that would make it much easier then to honour our father and mother. And not to murder and be hateful, not to commit adultery or be lustful, or not to steal or not to lie. Those things would be easier with if we could only keep this one. It would help us with the others then, wouldn't it? And it is a good command. How ugly the coveting character is. It really is. We sometimes see it in other people. Sometimes perhaps we see it in ourselves. We have these expressions in our English language of the green eye of envy. Of that just brooding, poisonous desire for what somebody else has. Again, we talk about people in our English language that are having a chip on their shoulder. Because they're always thinking everyone else has got it better than them. So they've got a chip on their shoulder about this, that and the other. Boy, what a horrible person they are. And don't they get you down? When you meet someone like that. And yet we can be like it too. Filled with jealousy. And that constant desire for these things. And on the other hand, if we could keep this commandment, what would we be like? The beauty of contentment. And we read of Paul in a prison in the letter of Philippians. And he says in verse 11, chapter 4, not that I speak of regard of need or have learned, I've learned in every state to be content with what I have. I know how to be abased and how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I've learned both to be full and to be hungry, to abound and to suffer. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. I've learned to be content. And what a beautiful thing that is, to be content. So we thought of the good command. Then let's think of a broken command. Some of the other commandments become, or have become, part of the laws of the land. Shall not murder. Not just there in God's law, but there in most laws around the world. And so, you shall not steal. You shall not lie, especially in a court of law. Those things become national laws. But this one could never be one, could it? Because how could it ever be upheld? How could it ever be policed? The police are trying to catch somebody who's been a thief or to catch somebody who's been a murderer. How are they going to catch somebody who's covetous? How would they know? How could this law possibly be upheld in a nation? Other commandments are seen with actions and words. This is a hidden commandment in our hearts. And so this last commandment takes things to another level to show us that God is interested in our hearts. And so I'll finally get around to telling you the title, A Look Inside Our Hearts. That's what this commandment is really there to do. The other commandments you could just boil down to the minimum sort of actions you must not do. You shall not murder. You know. And we say, well, there we go, that's easy. I've never done that. But this command doesn't have the same way of just being able to minimize it. This commandment shows us that God is interested in our hearts. This one is revolutionary, isn't it? It's not just saying, do this kind of thing and you'll be okay. Don't murder, all right, don't steal, as long as you haven't done any of those major things. But God is interested in our hearts, not just some superficial actions. And that's what we see with the rich young ruler. He comes to Jesus and he wants eternal life and he says he's kept the commandments. And Jesus lists some of them and he says, all of those I've kept. And Jesus says, what about this one? Sell all you have and give to the poor. And then follow me. And Jesus was putting his finger, by not saying the commandment, the one that everyone knew that was going on there, it would be in the back of everyone's mind by making an incomplete list. this one. Jesus saying to the man, your greed, your love of money, your grasping nature, you can't let it go, can you? You can't give all you have to the poor and follow me. It showed his fallen heart. And this commandment does. A broken command that shows us our heart. We've read these verses of Jesus several times in Matthew 15 this time. And Jesus says in verse 19, for out of the heart proceed evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, blasphemies. These are the things which defile a man. They come from the heart. And we've read this verse before. And what are those things? This broken command that comes from our broken hearts. And out of the heart come these things. Murders, that's the sixth. Adulteries, that's the seventh. Fornications, the same. Theft, that's the eighth. False witness, that's the ninth. Blasphemies, well, let's go back a bit to the third. All these things come from the heart. But via what? One bit we missed out. The first thing, out of the heart proceed evil thoughts. That's where it starts, with that coveting. It begins with that, and then it leads on then to those sinful actions. And so, this broken command, showing us our hearts, even if we don't get all the way to murdering somebody, who could possibly say they've kept this command? That they've never been greedy? That they've never wanted what somebody else had? That they've never been bitter or resentful? And it's a command we see broken so many times in the Bible. Eve was shown this fruit by the serpent, and she desired it. It could be translated, she coveted it. You could think of Cain, and in the story of him and Abel. He covets Abel's relationship with God, and so he murders him. You could think of Achan, after the Battle of Jericho, who sees some of the wealth, and again it says he coveted it and took it for himself. Think of King Saul, who coveted David's reputation. Or think of King David, who coveted somebody else's wife. Or think of Ahab, who coveted Naboth's vineyard. On you go, through many stories in the Bible of the sin of coveting. One that we've all done. Who could possibly think they could stand before God and say, I've kept this one? Even if we've prevented ourselves from doing any major wrong with our hands, what about our hearts? Our hearts are evil things. Our hearts are broken and fallen. And so thirdly, we see it a fulfilled and forgiven command by Jesus. We thought before of the beauty, if you could keep it, that beauty of contentment. Think of the life of the Lord Jesus. What did he have? He had so little. Did he have much wealth? He dies with just a couple of clothes that then the soldiers take. Popularity? He had it occasionally, but he knew it was only very superficial. And before long, those whole crowds were shouting for his death. He never had a chance to marry and have a family life. He left behind his job, a very ordinary job, to take up that work of teaching. He didn't have the success, the prestige of being a rabbi, or anything like that. Health, well, he certainly didn't have a long life, did he? His appearance, we're told in Isaiah, had nothing important about it that people would be drawn to him. And anything Jesus did have, he gave. He gave everything away. He gave his own life. The opposite of that grasping nature, which so easily we have, Jesus had the opposite, a giving nature. So he gave everything. And could you find on any page of the Gospels Jesus seeming jealous, envious, bitter? Can you think of any account in the Bible when he was like... From his heart, for all his words, all his attitudes towards people, we see someone who did fulfill this commandment. We see his contentment, how grateful, how thankful, how giving he is. He has no other gods before the true God. Jesus, the one who fulfilled this perfectly. And we see it in his life. That gain, that beauty of contentment. And in contrast, what about us? This commandment gets to the heart, doesn't it? And shows us what we're really like. And so, because of that, the people heard these commands on the mountain and they're afraid. And they're frightened that they might die. And the commandments are, in a sense, meant to frighten us. They're meant to show us God's perfect standard and show us how off the charts at the bottom we come. We're nowhere near what God requires. We cannot keep these commandments. And we come as broken sinners to Christ for forgiveness. This command, maybe more than all the others, shows our hearts and that we need forgiveness. That it isn't just a few little minor alterations we need to make and then we're perfect. We're so utterly falling short of that. There's nothing we can do but come to Jesus, but run to the cross and say, Jesus, forgive me, for I have a horrible heart, a heart that is envious and greedy and hateful and all the rest. And so we come to Jesus. We run to him and say, Jesus, forgive me and make me new. And lastly then, a Christian command. As those who've been forgiven, as those who've been clothed in Christ's righteousness, so trusting in him, how then are we going to live? Well, we're never going to do it perfectly, but we are going to try. And we're going to try to guard our hearts in Christ Jesus, as Paul would say. And we're going to try and protect our hearts, and we're going to try and pull up those little weeds of coveting that so easily sprout there, and instead follow Christ. So let's just think, just lastly, for the last couple of minutes, how the process works in our hearts and how we might be able to stop it. So how do we end up coveting? I think step one is on observation. We see things. That's pretty obvious. We're driving along the road and we see a Ferrari go the other way. We see it. We made an observation that that was a posh car. We drive past somebody's house, we visit somebody and say, wow, this is a big house. And we see things. We see a face in a mirror. We see a face on a magazine. We see things around us. We make observations. Happens all the time. Step two is we make a comparison. We begin to evaluate what we have and what they have. Now, again, that might just be a purely sort of factual observation. It happens so instinctively. You'll be there in a restaurant and the waiter or waitress brings out their your food to you and puts it down on the table and you smell it and you look at it and you pick up your knife and fork. And what do? You look at the table next door to see what they've got, to see what they ordered, and to see if they're better. We make a comparison, don't we? It's so easy that happens. And we look at things, and we see the car go past and think, that car costs more than my car. We make a factual comparison. That house is more expensive than my house. That holiday was longer than my holiday. We make those observations, those evaluations. But it goes further. It becomes a fixation. We had one glance, we said, at the car, then a second glance to evaluate it, and then we stare. We stare. We're focused on it. We're not just observing this fancy house we've arrived at our friend's own, but we're there going, wow, look at this amazing sofa, look at their fabulous kit. We're drinking it all in, we're taking it all in. We're dwelling on it. We're fixated on it. This is so much better than I have. We're thinking. We're looking at that face in a magazine and then we look at a face in a mirror and think, whoa, they are so much more attractive than me. We dwell on it. We become obsessed with it. Then we resent it, step four. We begin to think it's not fair. Normally with a little stab. Or at least in our minds. If only I had that. How come they've had all those promotions and I haven't? It's not fair. How come they're so successful as a Christian and I never have seen anything like that? It's not fair. And then on desire, a consuming thought. Actually, we're not thinking of anything else now apart from the fact that we want it. And so we're becoming bitter and angry and we've got a chip on our shoulder and we're depressed and angry and unhappy because we don't think we're going to get it. Or we go out of our way to get it. Maybe with legitimate, we're just going to work really, really hard. We're going to slave away until we can have what everyone else has. Or we're going to do it by stealing or lying or whatever else it might be too. That's the sort of process we go through, isn't it? And where do we think we should cut it off? Well, phase one is just an observation. I think you'd probably guess by the time you got to 3, 4, and 5, you're really into the realms of coveting, aren't you? You're no longer grateful. You're fixated on something else. No longer content. You're angry. That resentment, it's not fair. Who are we saying that towards? God, aren't we? He's wrong. He should have given me that and he hasn't. He's not fair. We're beginning to sort of process things. How are we going to get what we want? The one as Christians, they cut off that process, don't we? We see things. We live in a world. Of course we're going to see things. Yeah, there are those factual statements, those factual comparisons that might be the case. But somewhere around the 1, 2-ish, we want to cut it off, don't we? To just see the Ferrari go past and go, wow, that's a fancy car. But it's okay. I'm driving a car here myself. And this one's perfectly fine. To cultivate contentment. To see someone's successful job and they tell us, do you know, I've got another promotion. And you instantly think, oh, you had one last year. And the one the year before. And I haven't had one at all. But you swallow it down. And think, oh, that sounds great. I'm glad for you. And we're trying to be content. No, no, God, I don't need a promotion. I've got all I need. I don't need any more. And to try and be grateful. The attitude of gratitude. So hard. So easy just to slip along this process. It's so natural. But to be thankful to God. To turn around those little observations and to recognise what God has given us. Yes, and he does give different things to different people. But to trust God. To know he does do what is right. Maybe there's a reason he hasn't given you a Ferrari. Probably because you drive it too fast. Wrap it into a tree. He knows what he's doing. We need to trust him. To be content and thankful for what he's had. We need his help to guard our hearts in Christ Jesus. To develop that attitude of thankfulness and gratefulness to our God. Let's sing one last hymn. Number 757 in the hymn books. Up here on the screen as well, oh Jesus, I have promised. And in the second verse it says, I see the sights that dazzle, the tempting sounds I hear. But Jesus, draw thou nearer and shield my soul from lest thou sing to finish.